I'm Lights Camera Jackson. This is a new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Hope you're doing well. Thank you for listening. The Transformers saga returns. Netflix is doing a really cool thing. It's a three-part special new Transformers animated series, War for Cybertron. And the first part, Siege, it's 6 episodes, and it debuts Thursday, July 30th on Netflix. Joining me right now is the composer of Transformers War for Cybertron, Alexander Bornstein. Alex, thanks for being on the show.
Of course, thanks for having me.
My intro to the world of Transformers was the first live-action CGI movie that came out in 2007, the big blockbuster. What was your introduction to the world of Transformers?
I go back a little bit farther. My first memory of Transformers was watching G1 on the Sci-Fi Channel around 1992-93, when they first started broadcasting. They had an animation block in the morning, and you know, the first anime I ever saw was in that block, and the first Transformers episode I ever saw was in that block. And I was into the show for about it, like, for a little while as a kid. You know, I had missed the initial hype of the 80s when it was out, so there weren't a lot of toys to get at the time. There wasn't a lot of merchandise to bite into, and this is before the internet, so I didn't really get as deep into the fandom as I probably could have. But that was kind of my first exposure to Transformers and sort of the, you know, the mythology of it all. And, you know, I watched a little bit of Beast Wars, and then I, you know, would kind of keep up with the franchise here and there. And then the next big reintroduction is kind of similar to you, was the 2007 movie. And, you know, it really kind of caught me off guard, because the fact that they got Peter Cullen to come back as Optimus Prime, and it was such a rush of nostalgia I hadn't been expecting. So the G1 and that first 2007 film both have kind of special places in my heart.
Yeah, and when you got the opportunity to be a part of this new special series, did it instantly take you back to watching that first series in 92 and 93?
Oh, yeah, no, it was a really surreal thing, because, you know, it's, you know, as a composer, you're always thinking, like, well, what if I did this and what if I did that, and, you know, on these, all the franchises that are out there. And it was surreal and humbling to then realize, like, oh, I am actually going to have to come up with ideas for Optimus Prime and Megatron, and, you know, things that will resonate with the show, but also sort of stand, you know, alongside all the other great music that's already in the Transformers franchise.
And that's the interesting thing. I, in watching the first couple episodes, and when Optimus Prime comes in that first episode, I mean, what does that mean to you to kind of help bring in the entrance of such an iconic character and to come up with the right music for this entrance of somebody so well known?
Yeah, it was very daunting. And that particular moment, I probably wrote 4 or 5 versions before I finally felt comfortable, you know, submitting one for, you know, FJ and the team to review. So it was a lot of pressure and wanting to make sure that, you know, when Prime shows up in the series for the first time, it's kind of like Batman. It's like he you know, rolls in as he does and just, you know, takes control of the situation. And it's a really great moment. I wanted the music to make sure that it was keeping up with the visuals. And so that was basically capturing that heroic essence of Prime was a big challenge, but hopefully pulled it off.
Oh yeah, yeah, you definitely did. And really, in listening to the music of the first couple episodes, it blends electronic and kind of modern vibes with this classic rousing feel, bringing the fans back to some of the earlier incarnations of the Transformers world. How did you approach overall that balance and finding that balance in the music over these episodes?
It took some trial and error, you know, as you kind of get the feel of a project, and every project is like that. You know, you sort of are a chef and you're experimenting with ingredients and different levels and how much of this and how much of that. You know, I was kind of directed early on by FJ DeSanto, you know, that he wanted a very strong hybrid sound. And that's something that I really like doing as a composer, is sort of melding organic sounds like orchestra with more electronic process sounds like analog synthesizers or, you know, heavily affected processed organic material. What we did was we started off this process for creating the show and the music by doing sort of the three principal themes that kind of anchor the musical world of the show. And so, you know, then it was just a matter of kind of finding like a handful of electronic sounds that I liked and a handful of you know, orchestral palettes, and then just sort of melding them together and seeing how it worked in context with the show.
Mm. And there's big action moments. There's big action movements. Characters are moving around all the time. Are you working with the sound effects teams and the editing teams on that timing to get with specific moments?
Not until the final mix, but usually I work to a temp sound mix. So to the show's credit, I get a lot of room to really be the first person to take a stake in the sound of the show, because the sound designers are doing their thing and they do an amazing job with the show. But I kind of get free rein to sort of establish a lot of these hit points in the action, in the sequences. They're already rendered when I work to them, obviously, but like I get a lot of opportunity, especially in, you know, that first Megatron and Prime fight in episode 1. Hmm. Like they really just like you can they just want you to go balls to the wall with the music all the time. And so it's a lot of fun then to just, you know, really amp that up. And it's why the orchestra becomes so useful in those situations, because I love analog synths as much as the next person, but sometimes you really do need an orchestral foundation to kind of get that rousing feeling or that really tense drama, especially too when you get, you know, when you go to the opposite in some of the emotional moments, you really do need those, the lush strings or the single melodies, and that's as cool as all those textures are, you do need a strong thematic base to kind of support all of that.
And so do you feel like other people are, you know, once you have the first round of your music in, do you feel like maybe the sound teams and some of the other people are like taking cues from you? You can, since you have such free reign to sort of do what you want with it, do you suddenly realize, oh, maybe actually some things are shifting a little bit because of the work that I've put in?
It's a good question. I can't think of a specific moment where that might have happened. I do know there are times where I've definitely noticed that the sound design kind of dips down so that the music can actually come to the front of the party, as it were. And that's really exciting as a composer, because, you know, you sometimes don't get that creative latitude. So it's really exciting when all these really cool sound effects are going on, but then they come down so the music can come in and get sweeping and really sort of take part in the, you know, in the storytelling of the show. And it's not just wallpaper.
Right, right. In the appropriate times for it to be a part of it, absolutely. Now, in working with FJ, in working with the team on Transformers War for Cybertron, you know, this is three parts. So is there a little more pressure to sort of have to do three different story arcs worth of music going in? And why do you think the team decided to break this up into three parts?
The challenge is to kind of make sure that you're staying fresh, you know, because it's, you know, once you've established these themes, you have to kind of make sure that you're staying on top of the variety and changing. And then also, too, we definitely wanted to have a very distinct structure for each chapter. Right. And so without getting into too much detail, but, you know, Siege has a very specific sound. And then when we moved on to Earthrise, which I'm currently working on, we decided to sort of develop the palette further and go in sort of a direction that still carries along a lot of what we did in Siege, but Earthrise kind of ups the dramatic stakes and sort of ups the dramatic content of the music. And so that's a really cool, as much as it's daunting, it's an exciting challenge, because you know that the pressure is on you to make sure that whatever you're doing, it's impressive and it's making some kind of impact on the show. Mm. And it'll be the same case with the third chapter as well.
Yes, I heard the third chapter doesn't have the title yet. Are you?
Not yet, yeah.
It could. Do you know it and just can't reveal it?
I can't get into anything.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, we're all looking forward to that. But with Earthrise, with part 2, so you're working on this right now from home. How has that been for you?
Yeah, it's been good. I transitioned to working from home actually in 2018. I used to be in a studio in Los Angeles, and I was renting there. And then I've since repackaged, moved my studio out, and now I'm just based at home. You know, and then I was doing some recording for the show at Sonic Fuel Studios here in town. But obviously because of the pandemic, we've had to scale that back. But everyone's been really flexible and great with just sort of adapting to that change. And so they, you know, I send the material to them, they send it back to me, I get everything, you know, sort of ready to go. It goes off to the mixer, who also can work from home. Like it's been surprisingly organic, the sort of transitioning into this workflow, which I'm thankful for, because it's, I know some people have had a hard time.
Right, absolutely. But hey, you've been preparing for this the last couple of years by working it
yeah,
up.
Right, who would have thought?
Yeah, who would have thought? Have you noticed in sending everything to everybody, I mean, this process really hasn't slowed down, has it? It wouldn't have been faster to do it the normal way as opposed to how you're doing everything now.
Yeah, no, we've kind of been full steam ahead since I started on the show in August of 2019. Mm. I talked with them a little bit, and then in August I wrote the themes, and then in September I started working on the first couple of episodes of Siege. And I've been doing about two episodes at a time since. So, you know, now I'm in the middle of Earthrise, which right. I'm really excited. I'm equally excited for that to come out too. I think there's so many cool surprises for your fans in the show.
Good, good. What do you think the spread of time in between each of the six episodes is going to be? How many months would you guess?
I'm not sure. That's probably something that Netflix knows and they haven't told us yet. We were kind of all on the same page as the fans, you know, when they announced the release date a couple weeks ago. So I think that'll kind of be par for the course moving forward.
Alexander Bornstein, the composer for Transformers War for Cybertron Siege, is my guest right now on the LCJ Q&A podcast. You know, Transformers go from cars to robots and vice versa. When did your love of music transform from admiration to really a career in the entertainment industry?
It's a roundabout story. I started off as a kid, you know, I remember being like, probably around the same time I was watching Transformers for the first time, you know, I was obsessed with the music from like Back to the Future and RoboCop, which I probably shouldn't have been watching, but I did. Film music has always spoken to me more than any other kind of music. Like I have a very eclectic kind of taste, and film music has always kind of been my number one passion. But I started off wanting to be a filmmaker. So I was writing scripts, making films in high school and first couple of years of college, deep down wanting to actually be a composer. But I just kind of never got hooked in a way that, you know, made me feel like I could do it. You know, we tend to have a very Olympian attitude about music in our society where it's like, if you don't start playing the piano when you're 1 year old, well, then you're never going to have a career in music. You can't. It's this this virtuosic demand. And so I was kind of convinced that I just couldn't, and I probably shouldn't try it, and I probably wouldn't know what to do. But when I was in college, I kind of started experimenting on my own because I had taken a couple of years of piano lessons. So like I had a very basic foundation, but I kind of, the more I was experimenting and writing music on my own, I was like, oh my God, this is 1,000% what I want to be doing. I don't even care if I never make a dime off of this. And so I started enrolling in more classes at school, you know, music theory, jazz theory, orchestration. And then after a while, I was just able to switch over into the music program. And I was just like full bore. This is what I want to do. And this, you know, and I knew I wanted to stay in school for a couple of extra years. So then I applied for grad school programs. And then I went and did NYU's film scoring master's degree. And so at that point, then I was thinking, okay, I should probably, like, I think I could take a shot at this as a career. So I never thought I could, it would, you know, it could sort of evolve into what it's evolved into. But I was very lucky to kind of meet the right people in school, and, you know, one thing kind of led to another in sort of this windy way, but here we are.
Yeah, gotcha. The right path. That's good. And in looking at some of the things you've been a part of, a lot of them are comedy movies that you've been on the music teams for, like Ride Along, Bad Moms, Sausage Party, Pitch Perfect 3. Is there something specific about comedy movies that has really attracted to you, you to them as projects?
No, I mean, they're always a lot of fun to do, especially when they're funny movies. That always helps a lot too. Like Pitch Perfect 3 was, the first one is a favorite of mine. So it was really cool to be able to work on the third one. And that was when I was working for Christopher Leonard's a lot. And that was, he was the composer on those films. I think the thing that I really pulled out of the experience on those was just kind of understanding how to score comedy, you know, which is something that Chris is really good at. He imparted a lot of that wisdom to me when I was like on the music team for those films, because you're at ground zero figuring out, you know, how these studio films function. And so you're just seeing like, oh, okay, interesting. Like for certain kinds of comedy scenes, you're going to write this kind of a cue and this kind of a cue for another kind of scene. I think it was less of me being gravitated to comedy. I think it was more realizing that there's so much to learn by working in comedy, because it's all about structure and timing and, you know, the rhythm of everything. So that obviously all translates back into music very effectively.
And, you know, a little before my time, I think they did away with the category even before I was born, was the fact that the Academy Awards had music original score for dramatic score category and a comedy or musical score category. And it's right. just, I think it's cool for both types to be recognized in that sort of way. I guess, you know, they just wanted to consolidate them into one. But I think comedy movie scores should get some more credit out there. Drama, you can build some intensity, but you're right about the timing of comedy scores.
Yeah, I would love to see that come back. I think there's a lot of amazing work that's being done in that field. You know, and like you said, I think people kind of tend to put more of a prestige on drama, but I think the comedy stuff's just as challenging, you know, and composers like Chris, who I worked for a while, or Theodore Shapiro or Rolf Kent, you know, a lot of these composers, they do really impressive scores, and I think they do kind of get lost in the shuffle sometimes, which is unfortunate.
Now, you have also composed the music for a number of episodes of Supernatural. And Supernatural is coming to an end. CW announced, hey, we're going to take the final episodes. We're going to move them to the fall because we need the content for the fall. That's a smart decision. And you've had some of the music beyond this last season of Supernatural. How do you feel about one of the most successful primetime shows ever coming to an end this year?
I mean, it's a big shift. And all of us involved on the music side, it's very surreal, you know, sort of seeing the show. I mean, the show started when I was a freshman in college, you know, so it's I'm kind of late to the party in a sense, but it's hard to not work on that show and kind of fall in love with the characters and the mythology of it. So it's sad to see it go. I'm bummed out.
Have you composed any music for like the series finale or any involvement with one of the final couple of episodes on the way?
No, I haven't worked on it since the spring or so. I'm kind of waiting for Chris and the guys to circle back and let sort of see what's going on, because I know Jay handles some of the episodes too, so I don't really know kind of what the post-pandemic filming plan is yet.
Yeah. Well, I hope your music is a part of, I mean, being a part of a series finale in some way with of an iconic show like this would be awesome, and you've done such great work with it, so I hope that that all works out with the final few episodes of Supernatural. And when it comes to this Transformers show, we've had the various installments, whether it's the animated series or the other series you were talking about, or these movies, and now this. What do you think is the lasting appeal of this franchise and these characters?
I think it's a very timeless kind of story about, you know, just good versus evil. And I think that people really gravitate towards, you know, a character like Optimus Prime, who sort of is this embodiment of just kind of what you want people to be. You know, I think that's at least for older people, and that's kind of what keeps me coming back to it. For younger fans, I think there's something cool about the transformation from, you know, a truck into a robot kind of a thing, just has this sort of innate appeal. Yeah. And but I think the themes that it talks about are just always relevant in one form or another. And so I think there's a timelessness to all of that. And the characters that you are just kind of, they've been around for so long now, they just feel part of the pop culture lexicon.
Yeah, they definitely do. You're right about that. Yeah.
And I'm excited, I think, for people to see War for Cybertron, because I think we go a little bit deeper than fans have seen before with these characters, and kind of getting into Megatron's head, getting into Optimus Prime's head. And they're still the characters that everybody knows and loves, but I think we get to hear a little bit more about what makes them tick. And I think it just adds a nice nuance to everything.
Alexander Borenstein, the composer for Transformers War for Cybertron Siege. It premieres with those six episodes Thursday, July 30th on Netflix. Congrats on everything you've done. All the best wishes with the next installments of this Transformers saga. And thank you for being on the LCJ Q&A today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Cool. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. For more, go to lights-camera-jackson.com. Follow me on Twitter at LCJ Reviews and Instagram at LightsCamJackson. I'll see you next time on the LCJ Q&A podcast.